Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Podcast to Be Named Later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. My name is Brent Blackwell, here as always with Chris Jervis.
Not always here, but I'm here today.
Yeah, and TJ Alexander.
Yep.
All right, it's been 2 weeks since our last podcast, 2 weeks since opening day. This is Monday, April 18th when we are recording this, and it's not been a lot of wins since we last podcast. The Braves are 3-9 so far.
Woohoo!
We are winning one out of every four games we play.
Seems about right, though.
That means we're not getting swept every other series.
Well, I mean, that, like TJ said, that's about right, because about one out of every four of our players is a major league player.
Anything interesting about the first 2 weeks? I don't really want to talk about opening day much because it was just so depressing. It was the build-up of opening day and for it to all go, especially after I just spent that morning talking about how I wanted Tyler Flowers to play because of his glove. And then, of course, we lost the game where I don't know that Flowers would have made that play, but I
know AJ didn't.
I know the other one didn't.
Yeah, the first week, 10 days of the season has not been kind to Braves fans. That's about the best way to put it. I mean, I tune in and then I get frustrated and tune out. But it's a frustrating team right now. That's not a knock against any one particular player. It's just a team that is not very good, that will probably not be very good for the remainder of the year. But that was kind of expected. I mean, John Coppola, general manager, said last year in a Q&A session on Twitter that it's going to be worse before it gets better. And please, God, hope this is the worse before the better.
I don't really think we'll get worse. I think
hard to.
I mean, this sort of feels like rock bottom. Yeah. Like,
well, that's what I mean. I mean, I'm hoping that this is the worst you're speaking of.
Right.
And then we start. And I could see, even though the team has lost, there have been some improvements that you can see. I mean, some guys have improved. What's really struck me is it's the veterans that have been letting the team down, not the young guys that have been playing. I've actually been fairly, I don't want to say impressed, I've been fairly surprised with the bats so far this year. I fully expected the bats to be just totally awful. Now they're not just awful, they're just bad. But the team was scoring runs, you know, they got to a slow start and then they're scoring runs now. The problem is the pitching, and that's something that's just going to take time to develop. And that's one thing that fans have to kind of keep in mind, is that this is a process, and we can bring in all the players and all the prospects and all the veterans and all the people we want, but it's going to take a little bit of time, and hopefully we're on the short end of the time scale now, getting back to the winning ways.
I mean, I think Markakis and Garcia will come back to closer to where they're supposed to be, but they're kind of doing what we thought. The only surprise, good.
You mean like come back to earth a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I think they're
right.
They're doing fine.
I was wondering where you were going when you said Garcia, where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, back down, not batting .286 and getting on base .375. That's probably not going to keep happening for him.
Right.
But I didn't think, even with 28 plate appearances, I never thought Gordon Beckham would be batting .280.
No.
I just didn't think that was possible. .280, .357, .360. I didn't think he had that in him, even after like one game.
Yeah.
Just not going to, there's no way you're getting two hits and four bats. It's never happened.
I do think he's also, this is sort of the high end of his range of possibilities.
I mean, right. It's got to be, because it's higher than what I thought it was before the season.
Yeah. One of our best hitters so far has been Bud Norris, just because he's walked twice.
The Ender Inciarte injury hurt a good bit. I mean, it forced us to call up Malik Smith, which I know some fans were happy to see that. But, I mean, let's face it, Smith probably isn't ready right now, and he's kind of showing that. I would like to have seen him get more time at AAA, but the injury to Inciarte forced our hand. We bring him up. At least he's getting some exposure. But, you know, I don't want to say that Inciarte, when he was hitting, you know, just .250, was the spark plug to the team. But he seemed to kind of solidify one spot in the lineup a little bit.
Well, for the two games that we had him, loved watching him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, too. In a season where you know you're going to lose, it's fun to get to see those people who, you know, the three or four players on our team that might be pieces.
I wonder
when we're good again.
I hate to be pessimistic on him, and I don't know that I am, but it's I do worry a little bit about Malik's in that, you know, prospect evaluators, scouts were never as high on him as his, like, stats
Nor was I. I had concern about the lack of ability to hit the ball past the infield.
Yeah, I mean, he has a severe lack of power.
He profiled actually very, very similarly to Jose Peraza, mm-hmm. With a little bit better walk rate than Peraza.
Yeah, so I wonder if that's what we're seeing. His strikeouts are too high for that type of player.
Yeah, I mean, he's still young. He's still facing major league pitching for the first actual major league pitching, not spring trainer major league pitching. But his K rate right now is 38.5%. That's just not going to get the job done. Yeah. He's going to have to learn how to – he needs to use his speed. Just chop the ball down into the plate and beat it out.
Mm-hmm. He's also got to use his speed more
– smartly.
Yes, smartly. When you're,
more efficiently.
Right, because getting caught as many times as you steal is not helping anybody.
Right.
It just shows that he is not quite – he's relied on nothing but speed so far in the minors. That's what that tells me. And that he doesn't quite know how to steal bases yet.
Right. Yeah. Being fast is good. And as much as people want to talk about speed disrupting the pitcher and this and that and the other, it's also a detriment if you don't know how to use it. You know, running and giving him the green light every single time is not a good idea if he can't steal the base.
Right.
He needs to have a success rate of over 75 or 80% to justify the lack of power and the lower on-base percentage that he's got right now. I'd also like to see Kelly Johnson get some more plate appearances.
I would too, just because, I think he's generally a pretty good player.
It's the first time I'm seeing major league pitching, so the number could be closer, but it is a skyrocket in his K percentage for his career.
Sure.
It's doubled.
Yeah, he's not ever been, a prolific strikeout guy. He's also never faced major league pitching.
Right.
So I think some of it is just getting some scouting reports and seeing some major league pitchers for the first time. You know, he saw some of these guys in spring training, but in spring training, actual major league pitchers are just working on tweaking things, and then the rest of the guys are double-A pitchers trying to make a mark. So, yeah, that's the Braves.
Any other fruit? Markakis is notable in that he leads the majors with 9 doubles so far. That's
also
pretty neat.
Driving in good number of runs. He's got 12 RBI so far, I believe.
He's walking more than he struck out, too.
I've read a good article about him being excited about the leadoff role recently, too.
See? It's weird. I wish people would listen to us when we say things like this. The last time I told the Braves about a particular player at leadoff, we went on a 14-game winning streak. Hey, Dave O'Brien, are you listening? Try and get Brent's lineup to Freddie.
Yeah. You see, that the 9 spot would be a perfect place for someone like Malik Smith, too. Someone who...
You need about 5th in that lineup now that Inciarte is gone. That's like an important lineup spot.
I would say...
Okay, so I start with on base, and that's it's at the top. So I would start with Markakis at first. I would put Freeman second because he's our best hitter.
Garcia third is still just perfect.
Garcia is still perfect third. So fourth...
Your next best hitter...
Kelly Johnson, even though he's not it this year.
Next best hitter is maybe, Kelly Johnson when he plays probably would be my next best hitter.
And then your next best hitter would go 5th with any kind of pop.
Yeah, I might go Tyler Flowers there.
It might be the catcher spot, whoever that is.
Yeah, and then 6, 7, 9 would be...
The other three.
Would you put Smith at number 9, or would you put Smith at around 7, where he can function as kind of an island by himself?
Well, first off, I'd figure out who I'm missing here.
Oliveira, missing the left field. But Kelly Johnson would take his spot, basically.
Right.
Okay.
So you're missing...
NCRD, so we're missing...
So I haven't put Malik in...
Ibar.
Oh, jeez.
There's your 9 hitter.
Yeah. Ibar is my 9. Malik is probably
7.
6 or 7.
Who are we listening? Who are we leaving out at 6?
Jace Peterson.
Oh, yeah, they're the same.
Yeah.
God, that sucks.
So anyway, get into Freddie Gonzalez with that lineup. We did the best we could.
That's not ideal.
But
we are missing 2.
Joking aside, Markakis in the leadoff spot is...
Yeah.
Needs to keep happening.
It was a good change, and it was a smart change.
And that's one of the things, too, we were talking about in the lineup. Brent and I have talked about this off-air a couple of times. The myth of lineup protection. There is some data that says lineup protection exists. There's some that says it doesn't. Players feel that it exists. Other players feel that it doesn't. But basically, over the last 10, 15 years or so, the research has shown that you make a batter better by putting better hitters in front of him rather than behind him. It's not the guy behind Freddie Freeman protecting him. It's the runners on base in front of him protecting him. And if major league hitters are so much better hitters and pitchers are so much worse with runners on base that you make the batter better by forcing the pitcher to make good pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And having somebody like a Nick Markakis on and then a Freddie Freeman, who's your number two on base percentage guy on the team behind Markakis, that makes your three-hole guy better, even though he's probably not statistically put up good numbers in the past because he's been somewhere else in the lineup where there's nobody behind him.
You're going to have to pitch to him.
Right.
To put Freeman second, you have to commit to putting a non-pitcher ninth there because you do want two good hitters in front of your best hitter.
Right.
Or, I'm sorry, not good hitters, but you want two non-pitchers.
Real hitters. Yeah.
Right.
You don't
hitters.
Want an automatic out.
Right.
In front of it. And that's what a pitcher is an automatic out.
Right now, Ibar is not far away from that, but at the same time, there's reason to believe Ibar would be better going through the season than any given pitcher.
Except Budnors.
But it's a win-win, though, because it's not only do you get as many good situations for your best hitter, but he also comes to bat 30, 40 times more over the course of the season.
And more Freddie Freeman is a good thing.
Yeah. So that means when you're down to your last out in the ninth inning, Freeman's going to be more often the man at the plate than if he were batting third or fourth or fifth or
and
sixth.
And at third, you waste that at-bat sometimes because the number three hitter in the lineup comes to the plate with nobody on and two outs more often than any other spot in the lineup, which means you have your best hitter up there with nobody on and two outs. The only way he's going to really be beneficial is to smack a home run there. And Freeman can hit a home run, but you know, having guys on base makes that number three hole a little bit
Freeman better. Also walks and hits doubles and singles. Garcia's great. That's one reason Brent hit this in the article he wrote on Alpha Flower Roll of why Garcia is so perfect for that and that kind of optimized lineup is that he lives or dies by the home run.
So if he's up there with that nobody on two outs, he can still score a run for you.
Right.
Ideally, Garcia's not in a starting lineup. Ideally, he's a good player on your bench. But I had to be careful about using ideal number three hitter for Adonis Garcia. But
he's ideal on this team.
He's the ideal number three hitter for the 2016 Braves.
Right.
Yes.
And that's something to bear in mind. All of this is contextual.
Yeah. So, who, in your opinion, would be the first player we bail on, the first offensive player we bail on this year? You think Francoeur?
We bail on in terms of not
release. DFA
and DFA.
I think Ibar is paid too much and probably has too much value elsewhere to be a DFA.
Yeah, I think Ibar also.
Oliveira could be a DFA candidate, but
I don't know
what's going to play out for that.
We'll go ahead and address Oliveira. He was arrested. We don't know any specifics really on it, and it's.
So he said, she said, domestic violence incident in Washington.
Yeah. I mean, it's a worst-case scenario that he doesn't play.
With
right? Mm-hmm. That's possible.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably facing a suspension. I mean, baseball has moved into the football, you know, the NFL range of
good.
Domestic violence.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's embarrassing for the sport, too. Yeah. How long would a suspension be, you think? 50 games? Something like that?
I don't think it would be as many as 80, but I think.
What was Chapman's? His was 30.
Wow. 25, 30 maybe.
Jose Reyes was.
See if there's.
I just read an article today that the Rockies may just DFA Reyes.
Huh.
I'm not a big Reyes fan, but if he's going to be DFA'd, and we're looking at this collection of chuckleheads that we have on the field right now,
somebody will pay him more than we want to.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how that would. I mean, maybe 25, 30 games on that. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That would leave, I guess.
Chapman got 30.
He got 30?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that would leave Gordon Beckham, Drew Stubbs.
I mean, the teams just do what they need to do with it, and they know more about the situation than we do, and it's too early to really speculate on that. But
Francoeur is already at negative .2 WAR for the season. Not really hitting real well.
Well, what do you mean? His slugging percentage is all the way up, and the first number is 8. The first non-zero number is 8. That's Babe Ruth territory, as long as you move the decimal place. .083 slugging percentage for Frenchie.
Stubbs and Beckham. I think Beckham has a little bit too much value as in positional versatility. You know, Francoeur, I don't think, has that same luxury.
Yeah, I think Francoeur is a candidate to be
the first give up of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's not working out so far, but I think we're still 2 weeks away from that really being a thing.
I think it was further along than that. I think they'll give him more time than that.
The pitching stats, it's definitely too early, I think, on pitching statistics to glean anything and useful from them. But the offensive stats, it's still kind of too early to see. But you can get a sense that some guys just aren't doing well. But that can turn around quickly.
I think the on-base numbers tend to be pretty solid throughout the year.
Yeah.
Early on. Batting average will go up and down. But
you're just sort of looking at walk rates and strikeout rates maybe right now. And some of these walk rates are encouraging. Tyler Flowers has a .375 on base percentage. So Freddy Gonzalez, if you're listening, maybe AJ should not get more than twice as many plate appearances as Tyler Flowers.
Especially when the glove's so much better.
Right.
On the pitching side of things, I mean, Julius Chacin has looked really good this year, so it's about time to go ahead and start making phone calls right now. Maybe we can flip him to Arizona for, you know,
Shelby Miller. He's struggling.
Shelby Miller just injured himself in the weirdest way. He scraped his knuckles of his pitching hand on the rubber on a follow through. Ended up having to come out the game.
On the rubber?
Yeah. Long orangutan arms.
There's a still.
Not on the rubber, I'm sorry, on the mound.
Yeah, there's a still of it. Like, it's his leg like up in the air and his hand on the ground.
Weird. Scraped up his knuckles. He tried to stay in, but he lost his control. He was sailing pitches to the backstop, and they went ahead and removed him because he had busted up his knuckles on the mound.
Yeah, so.
But I'd take it back.
If Chacin keeps this up, we do not need to do what we did with Aaron Harang 2 years ago and just hold on to him for the entire season and then watch him sign a 2-year, $16 million deal with the Phillies. We should trade him in June
and get if he's still good in June. Yeah. Preferably a pitcher who can hit the plate with their left hand.
Yeah.
I mean, Winkler looked good until the injury.
Yeah, that's just depressing.
Jim Johnson's been fairly. I mean, I know his ERA is a little bit high, but his secondary statistics are pretty solid.
Yeah, an 8 to 2.7 strikeout to walk ratio. It's not bad.
Grilly has been struggling this year. I'm wondering if there's some residual effects from that injury.
Or residual effects from him being 39.
Tomato, potato.
What's his walk per 9 innings? I saw it a while ago.
9.64.
Yeah. Well, it's like 5 walks and 4 2/3, I think.
Hunter Cervenka is striking out 16 per 9, but he's walking 10.8 per 9.
Still turns out to be a decent fit.
You know, we've actually got a problem with walks this year. That's killing us. I'm looking at the team walk ratio, and Winkler was at 4, Grilly's at 9.5, Hunter Cervenka's at 10.8, Vizcaino's at almost 7, Ogando's at 5, Chris Withrow's at almost 7. Williams Perez, Mr. Smoke and Mirrors himself, is at 5. Jose Ramirez, who is actually our first DFA candidate for the year,
that's true,
is at 18. Eric O'Flaherty is walking 9 per 9. Now, granted, these numbers are artificially inflated because we're talking about guys who have 2 innings pitched, 3 innings pitched, but still.
On a team-wide scale, though, those few innings have all been bad.
Yes.
That's the unsettling thing. So, a popular topic of discussion over the first few weeks of the season has been the Braves, obviously a really bad start, and how much blame Freddy Gonzalez deserves. I think we've touched on it already that we think there's not too much to work with here. I think there were games where maybe a better defensive substitution, Tyler Flowers, might have won a game or something, but...
Or something.
Yeah, maybe the first 2 games of the season.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I mean, you give a guy a bad team, you know, you could give Bobby Cox, Joe Maddon, pick any manager this team, and I don't think they're doing much better than 5-7 right now.
You know, it's hard sometimes to say, could it get any worse? Yeah, we could have Jim Riggleman on this team, managing this team. I mean, yes, it can get worse. I think Freddie is, I don't want to say he's been without blame. I mean, he's made some just weird decisions in terms of where to bat certain players, Ibar at second. You know, like you're talking about Flowers over Pierzynski. But I'll give Freddie a little bit of credit. first off, he doesn't have anything to work with. And second, he seems to be learning a little bit. He's modified his usage of his best pitcher in the bullpen a little bit, bringing in Vizcaino to face Harper in the heart of the lineup several times against the Nationals. That's a smart move. You're using your best pitcher against their best hitters rather than saving your best pitcher for the last three meaningless outs of the game.
Right.
That's something I'll give Freddie credit for, even though it's kind of a movement happening in baseball, as TJ had mentioned off air. The other thing Freddie did was he made some defensive substitutions, non-catcher related, that came into play. I think in the one game that Adonis had booted two balls.
I think it was our first win.
He moved Beckham over to third late in the game, and Beckham catches a scorching line drive
right. That
would have gone for an easy double. So he's made some decent moves. I don't think this team would be more than a win better with a different manager. I don't think they could be a little bit worse with a Jim Riggleman type manager, but
right.
Freddie's Freddie.
Yeah, I think he's learning too. I think they're. I mean, even the move of Marquez to the leadoff spot tells me that it's just the one thing that bothers me is that it's not that he's consistently bad with his decision making. It's that he's occasionally both, and he doesn't seem to have a lot of conviction one way or the other.
There's no logic to his decision.
I think he knows when he bats Ibar leadoff. He, in his mind, has a reason for batting Ibar leadoff, which is he's speedy. He's a prototypical leadoff man in the physical sense. And also, when he bats Markakis leadoff, he has reasoning in his mind on that, too, which is he gets on base the most. He's going to start every third game with a double or something like that. And
right.
I don't know that...
How can he reconcile those two ideas?
Right. Yeah. I think he kind of goes back and forth between things too much. And that's something I've noticed in interviews with him before, in that he has described himself as both old school and new school. He's sort of trying to please everybody is the sense that I get
from
his managerial style, which...
He catches a lot of flack, too, for not having a lot of emotion, not having a lot of fire. People grew up on Bobby Cox in the Braves era. Bobby Cox was very emotional. He'd get out there and he'd get in an umpire's face. He'd get thrown out of the game. That's a different personality than Freddie. I don't think it should be held against Freddie that he doesn't do that. It's none of that stupid, he doesn't have his players back. But the players have routinely stood up and said, hey, Freddie is a good guy. We respect him. I think Freddie controls the clubhouse fairly well. I think Freddie has the respect of his players. There may have been a player or two here a couple of years ago that he didn't have their respect. I don't think those players are here anymore. I think you get into... If you're going out there expecting Bobby Cox, you're going to be disappointed. There's only one Bobby Cox. You shouldn't expect another Bobby Cox. You should expect Freddie Gonzalez to be what he is. And what he is a mediocre to below average manager managing a below average team.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, there are aspects of his game that are good. That are what you looked for, which is, I don't think he doesn't overbunt, I don't think.
Nope.
And he doesn't. I may need to check to see how much he relies on intentional walks, but it's...
When I last checked it last year, he was towards the bottom.
Of issuing them?
He did not issue many intentional walks.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, there are aspects of his strategy that are good. It's just that they're not always consistent, and I don't know why they wouldn't be consistent. And,
right.
and I, that may be the case for a lot of managers. I mean, football coaches do it too. You have coaches who... Fourth and one, know they have a great, great chance of getting the first down, and they'll go for it a bunch of times, and then some game where they really need it, they just will punt instead. And it doesn't always, their logic doesn't always stay consistent.
I think it's part of that is because they have to face, and maybe baseball too, they have to face the press conference after the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make a good decision that has a bad outcome.
Yeah,
plenty of good decisions have bad outcomes. And as long as you're making the good decision based on good, sound logic, good, sound reasoning, then there should be nobody that should question you for it. It's when you start doing what you were talking about. We go for it on fourth and one every time because we have the big bruising back who can get 5 yards at a clip. And then all of a sudden, late in a playoff game where we need 1 yard, we decide to punt for it.
Yeah.
You know, punt it rather than go for it. That's not a consistent use of your logic there. I would question why you didn't go for it rather than why you did.
Yeah, I think with Freddie, I mean, it just goes back to it. I think he is trying to wear a lot of different hats instead of just narrowing down whatever he thinks is the best managerial style.
Right.
I think he's trying to say, oh, yeah, okay, Ibar, yeah, that seems like a good leadoff hitter. Some folks think Ibar should be the leadoff hitter. He can bat leadoff. And then other times it's, you know.
You think there's any, not to go too conspiracy theory on it, but any chance that Caballero's talked to him at all about any of that? I mean, do you think he's like maybe saying like, look, you don't have to go full like optimization of a lineup, but Pat Markakis leadoff, or like, you know, look at OBP when you're filling out number one.
I think it's reasonable that somebody has gotten in his ear. I do.
This is the team to do it with too, because it's a bad team and it has no expectations.
Yeah, let's try it this
way. You're not going to miss the playoffs because of using, you know, new strategies, new ways of thinking. You're going to miss the playoffs because we gave you a last place roster.
And I think that's definitely where you start with, especially not to go back on it too much, but when you go back to lineup optimization, it's like that's the most important thing. Like, batting Freeman second is a little unorthodox, even though, I mean, teams have been doing it for the past few years. But
and if you're not going to bat Freeman second, batting fourth so that you can take advantage of the runners on base or more runners on base. I mean, generally second and fourth are your best spots. But
the Reds have been batting Votto there for its second. For
Mike Trout spent half of his career batting second. Joey, not Joey, Josh Votto? Donaldson. Donaldson was batting second a lot last year. I mean, Goldie's batted second a lot. There's a it's more of a movement now to put your best hitters at second because, again, it makes the guys behind them better by virtue of the fact. I mean, when we were looking at going into the season, our lineup was Inciarte leading off, Ibar hitting second, Freeman hitting third. Well, and then Markakis hitting, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, whatever, depending on who the players were. Well, Inciarte and Ibar have a combined career on-base percentage of about .325. And so what do you want? Whereas Markakis and Freeman have a combined on-base percentage of about .370. Which one of those is likely to put runners on base on a consistent basis? Those two at the top of the lineup or Inciarte and Ibar at the top of the lineup? And like I said before, putting runners on the base on base is the best way to make a hitter good.
Yeah, and one other thing too, I was thinking about this when I was reading Brent's article on the lineup thing, is that a lot of that data on the three-hole hitter being up the most with two outs and nobody on base, I wonder if that changes if you're batting the pitcher eighth. Does that data then change?
I think it'd be interesting because I think it all might change based on if teams start optimizing their lineups.
Right.
Because one reason the fourth hitter comes up with runners on a lot is because teams bat their best hitter third.
Right.
So
that's what I was thinking. If you're batting your batting Freeman third, might not be a horrible idea if you're batting Malik Smith ninth and Marquez first. You know what I mean?
I wonder how it would change because
the data would have to change.
Because the reason third isn't as valuable a spot is because for years managers have hit not good hitters in the second spot just because of their ability to move runners, and they sacrifice actual good hitters for
Bobby Cox, but Garrett Anderson, the two-hole.
Yeah. Like Mark Lemke looks like a two-hole hitter. Get out there, Limmer.
Can't hit home runs, you get the bat second.
Right. Yeah. So I think maybe that has affected the numbers somewhere, and it would be interesting to see how everything changes.
If everybody shifted over.
I almost wonder if just the best way to do a lineup is just put your best hitter first, your second best hitter second, your third best hitter third.
I've tinkered with that on OTP for like weeks at a time. Just like, all right, Freddie Freeman, you're batting leadoff, and whoever else batting second.
Yeah.
Just go down the list.
That's a good segue into, or talking about Freddie
into
and
OTP.
We should have an all OTP pod. We'll have to get Thomas on for that.
Yeah.
Tommy Poe. But, so talking about the things that Freddie has done differently this year, one interesting thing that has gotten some attention around baseball this year is his usage, like you said, of Aroldis Vizcaíno and how he's been bringing him in to face the middle of lineups, regardless of what inning it is. He's somewhat limiting it to the eighth and the ninth innings, but I think it's interesting. I think the Braves, I never thought it would be the Braves, and I definitely never thought it would be Freddy Gonzalez, but we are going to be maybe one of the first teams to help
break the closer hold.
Break the closer hold, which is exciting to even have a glimpse of that.
And there was one game, y'all might remember, where he did it, I think it was in the seventh, but he did it when there were runners on, which is great. It's like, yes.
I mean, granted, it's 3 years and a division series too late, but...
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, I, sucks that it took that to learn it.
Well, it took that and a couple of years.
Yeah.
Since we bring that up, I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but last year I went to a Braves Nationals game and I saw, this is when Juan Uribe was on the team and David Carpenter was pitching for the Nationals. And so we had great seats, some company seats that somebody had, and right behind home plate. And so watching David Carpenter for the Nationals pitch to Juan Uribe, Uribe, of course, jacks a home run in the left field seats. And Braves fans everywhere are cheering, and I had no idea how to react to that because, okay, ostensibly, yes, the Braves just scored a run, so clap for that. But also, the inside of me is crying right now because I'm,
all you can see is Craig Kimbrell standing in the bullpen.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, man, I've seen this. I never wanted to see David Carpenter give up on a run to Juan Uribe again, even if it benefits us in any way. It would have been like Jim Leyritz playing for the Braves against, like, the Indians, Mark Wohler, Mark Wohlers or something. It would just been, I can't watch. Momentary flashbacks to that.
I just want to start telling stories about that night. I'll stop myself.
Yeah. You punched a tree, right?
I did punch a tree.
Yeah.
I remember Chris, three of us were all talking on Messenger, I guess. And I was like, I swear Kimbrell said, you can bleep me out. This is going to be our first bleep. And I was like, I swear Kimbrell mouth, why the f*** aren't I in the game? And Chris immediately, like God, sends me a gif of Kimbrell going, "What the f*** are I in the game? What the f*** are I in the game?" Over and over again. It's just like,
yeah, it was
so frustrating.
It was bad. But yeah, it, you know, he's learning from it.
Right.
That's something that I don't know that like Matt Williams or Don Mattingly would have done. So, you know, they're
yeah, we could have Don Mattingly.
He just got swept by the Braves.
Yeah. One thing, I mean, Freddy Gonzalez is, He's Freddie. He's, like we said before, a mediocre to below average manager. But he doesn't have a lot to work with on this team. And, you know, none of this is to be in support, you know, should be taken to be, hey, we support Freddie. He's our guy. He's the best option we can have. If there's a better option, we'd love to have it, but it would be wasted. If you go out and you sign Joe Maddon to a 5-year contract to come manage this team, the first 2 years of that contract are going to be wasted as the team rebuilds, as it's, you know, a bad team. Plus, you're kind of limited in which managerial options are going to come here when you're at the bottom of the barrel, you know. People are going to come here when you're on the upswing. There's a reason Joe Maddon went to Chicago and not to, you know, the Minnesota Twins or, you know, somebody like that, the Phillies.
Right. When you've got somebody like Coppolella running things too, you give Freddie the chance to maybe change and adapt like he's doing a little bit.
Yeah.
And like, okay, well, if you want to get on board and kind of do it and, you know, give yourself a chance, I'm giving you an interview pretty much, two-season interview.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
He's a known quantity. They know what they have with him, good or bad. They know what they have, and he's cheap. He's going to be cheaper than the option to replace him in all likelihood. And by all accounts, the players like him, and he controls the clubhouse. And right now, that's what they need is a stable clubhouse.
Right.
Had one more interesting usage thing from our bullpen to discuss, and that is, so far, Eric O'Flaherty has appeared in 7 games, and he has pitched 2 innings total in 7 games, which...
And he has 2 losses.
It's a pretty extreme loogie usage there, which is a lefty one-out guy. And it got me searching on Baseball Reference on the Play Index to see if there was anything interesting about that. And so I looked for guys who have pitched more than 2 times as many games as total innings they had in a season.
More than 2 times as many games.
So if you pitched 50 innings, you had to appear in over 100 games.
Okay.
The record for games pitched at this sort of rate was set in 2012 by Randy Choate of the he's pitched with the Cardinals a little bit. He's an old lefty. He had 80 games pitched with 38 2/3 innings.
Nice.
On the season. Every other pitcher who's done this with at least 20 games... Oh, wait, hang on. Here's one from 93. I really hope he's not right-handed, because it's going to make me sad if he is. No, he's not. Okay, good. There are 19 seasons in big league history where a pitcher has had at least 20 appearances and then less than half as many innings.
Okay.
18 of them were lefties. The righty, a member of the 2015 Braves. Do you know who that is?
2015 Braves...
is the only right-hander ever in baseball history.
Sugar Ray Marimon.
No.
Okay.
This guy had 22 appearances. He pitched 10 and one-third innings with a 3.48 ERA.
Peter Moreland.
Peter Moreland is correct.
Nice.
Peter Moreland, the only last year, became the only big league pitcher to ever do that right-handed. Wait, hang on. Let me make sure Mike Myers wasn't, but I'm pretty sure. He was just a killer from a movie. Yeah, no, he's a lefty. Jesse Orozco did it a number of times. John Franco did it a few times near the end of his career. But it's and Eric O'Flaherty is on that track, too. Well, I don't know if he'll make it 20 games, but...
He might be my top pick for a DFA.
Yeah.
It's been
pretty... Well, I think his roster spot is safe until we get another lefty in the organization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just an odd thing that I found. All right, so 2 weeks ago, it was over 2 weeks ago, we did our draft picking teams, right?
Yeah, and I don't think I did so hot.
That's all close.
It's early, so we have early returns. 2 weeks into the season. TJ is in the lead. 63 wins. The stars of his lineup so far, the Nationals have 9 wins, tied for the Major League lead with 9 wins. Dodgers have 8. The White Sox, a late pick, have 8. And then your last two picks were the Rockies and Reds, who have won 7 and 6 games so far.
Nice.
Sure story.
Your worst pick so far has been the Marlins, the team that got swept by the Braves.
Yep, pretty bad.
In second place is me with 61 wins. I'm 2 behind TJ so far. I've got the Cubs, who have won 9 games, at least a solid first pick. Royals, finally picking up the Royals in like the 8th round of this thing, have eight wins so far. The Giants have 7. My worst team, the Twins. I took the Twins before the Royals. not so great so far. Oh wait, I thought these were in order, so maybe not, because I've got you got the Tigers here at the bottom for me.
Yeah, the Tigers are. I left that out of you when I was.
Everything else is in order. Okay. All right. Yeah. So the last pick of the draft, the Phillies have 6 wins so far.
Great.
And then Chris is not that far behind. 56 wins.
I'm in
Chris's
rebuild
teams.
Mode.
Your best pick so far has been the Orioles. 8 wins for the Orioles.
Yeah, they're in first.
Cardinals, you did wind up with the Braves, so like me.
You reach for them, too.
I have a lot of middle-of-the-road teams. I don't have any standouts.
There are a lot of fives and sixes on your column. But anyway, so TJ has a two-game lead in the standings for our prediction contest.
Could change which he today.
I remember I had the Harper pick.
Can we trade?
For MVP, and I'm feeling pretty good about the Harper pick so far.
Yeah.
For MVP.
Yeah.
Man, not that this matters for the podcast, but his fantasy points per game in our fantasy league is insane.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 16.
Because he's walking constantly.
Yeah.
So, if it does wind up in a tie, though, that doesn't mean anything. It all comes down to Adonis Garcia home runs, and he has 1 home run so far.
I'm the closest right now, still.
You picked 6? Yeah. Where were you, 11?
11, maybe? 13, something like that.
I had 19. So, come on, Adonis.
Nah, stay calm.
Well,
get excited.
We can let Adonis. Get.
It's home runs as a Brave, right?
Yeah.
His major league home runs.
Oh. So his home runs as an Oriole later in the season will count?
Brett just thinks he's going to get traded to Colorado.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
He could. For Trevor Story.
Or he just traded to Tampa Bay.
We'd probably screw that up and get Charlie Blackman back in that deal or something.
I don't know. We haven't screwed up many trades. We're pretty...
Well, there's that one with LA.
Yeah, I was going to say now. It's not looking great.
Yeah. That one will be a very interesting trade to go back and look at like 5 years from now. Just because of so many parts being involved.
Yeah, I mean...
We get a rebate in that deal?
No.
He was separate.
Yes, that was an earlier trade with LA.
We got Withrow, Jim Johnson.
Not Withrow.
You're mixing them together.
That's
too.
Uribe. That's who we got with Uribe early in the year.
Who do we send to them for that?
Peraza.
Completely useless. Wait, for Uribe?
Yeah.
Completely useless players.
Got us John Gant, really, right?
Kiaspo, Ian Thomas, Eric Stoltz, and some. Oh, Juan Jaime.
Juan Jaime was like the one you might could fix, I guess.
Yeah.
He hadn't been fixed in 6 or 8 years.
Yeah, I know.
So
he's just better than Kiaspo.
The late summer trade for Oliveira, we got Oliveira, we got Paco Rodriguez, who has not thrown a pitch yet for us, which we knew that at the time. We got a... Did we get spending money? Did we get money in that trade? Or did we get a draft?
We did. We got enough to offset the salary differential, I think.
Oh, no, I'm in like a international money.
We got slot money.
I think
money.
We got that from Miami as part of the deal.
We got a draft pick from Miami. We got the competitive balance draft pick. I think it's... So we get the 35th overall pick this year in the draft as part of that trade.
38.
Something
whatever
like that.
Whatever it takes.
We'll see. We got... Well, Braz is gone now. Where is he at? Cincinnati?
Yeah, he went over in the... Somehow the Dodgers wound up involved in the Todd Frazier trade.
They're creative.
Yeah.
So Cincinnati sent Todd Frazier to Chicago and got Jose Peraza somehow from the Dodgers. I'm not sure what the Dodgers got in that.
Los Angeles, Peraza went with Brandon Dixon and Scott Schebler to the Reds. The White Sox sent Micah Johnson, Frankie Montas, and Trace Thompson to the Dodgers. Reds sent Todd Frazier to the White Sox. I remember last year when everybody said, we should go get Todd Frazier, and I started looking at the splits. He's not a very good hitter away from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And this year he's kind of showing that, although it's early in the season, he's at a 523 OPS through 50 plate appearances right now.
We got a prospect from the Dodgers in the Oliveira trade too. Zachary Bird,
that's
I think.
Right.
Yep.
The big names of the trade have not worked out great for us. Although, how's Alex Wood doing?
He was bumped in the spring, but he's back to... He's 1-1 now, I think.
He's going to start tomorrow.
Yeah, you'll get to see Alex Wood tomorrow.
Got Jim Johnson back in that deal.
So, he's doing okay.
Zachary Bird is 2-0 with a 3.38 in 5 innings at A-plus Carolina.
And we also, and y'all probably mentioned this, I'm just reading it, it's reminding me that we also sent Bronson Arroyo to them.
Bronson.
Man, that would be like a good true or false question that I would probably get wrong. If he ever played for us.
Well, he didn't ever play for us.
He didn't ever play for us, right?
Yeah. Let's talk week ahead real quick.
Do we have to?
Yeah. We got the Dodgers coming to town. It's a big
Followed
ticket.
By...
Go see Clayton Kershaw on Thursday?
Businessman special game? Is that him?
I might go do that. Kershaw is going to be facing last night's closer, Matt Whistler.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have that going for us, which is nice.
Whistler's on Thursday.
Yeah, they pushed him back a day, I believe. He's going to be facing Kershaw.
Who's pitching Wednesday? For the Dodgers.
Yeah, we don't care about
yeah,
us.
Yeah, we don't care about us.
Ryu?
Okay.
I don't know. No, I was asking. Guessing.
Are you what?
Maybe it's Kenta Maeda?
All right, we have Tehran versus Wood on Tuesday. Whistler versus Stripling on Wednesday. Looks like you shifted it. Perez versus Kershaw. You got to be kidding me.
Williams Perez versus Clayton Kershaw.
At 12-10.
Hey, Freddie Garcia.
We're going to win that game.
Christ.
I'm calling it. We're going to win that game.
And then 3 with the Mets at home. Norris versus Harvey. Oh, God. Chacin versus Steven Matz. Like our chances. Whistler versus Syndergaard. Because, you know, Whistler versus Kershaw would have been unfair. Then we go up to... We have 2 versus Boston. Tehran and Porcello. Perez and Price. And then we head to Boston for 2 more. Bud Norris versus somebody Wright. I'm guessing it's not Jamie Wright.
The Atlanta games, the Red Sox games that are happening in Atlanta, what days of the week are those?
Wednesday, Thursday. I'm sorry, Monday, Tuesday.
Monday, Tuesday, next week. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe instead of doing this podcast, we should just go to a Red Sox game.
Can we figure out a way to do that?
There's 2,520 tickets available.
Well,
we could go Thursday to the Dodgers game and watch a no-hitter.
Yeah.
Williams
Perez is going to throw a no-hitter. Hey, he is. I already called that.
So Whistler was supposed to start Tuesday, and they moved him back to Wednesday.
Right. Okay. Sure. Okay.
I'm calling that because baseball is stupid, and stupid things happen.
Freddie Garcia had a beat.
Yeah. So if I gave you right now, after this horrendous start, if I gave you an over or under of 99.5 losses for the season, where are you taking now that we're 3-9?
Take the under.
Under.
Still taking under. Still taking less than 100.
I think it's I don't close think it'll be much less, but it'll be close. I think
Maybe 97.
95, 97 as well.
I'll say 95, 96, yeah.
Yeah. I was just curious what you would think.
But one thing, and this is not to be, you know, super, you know, I hate the Debbie Downers, but I also hate the super optimistics, we're going to win the World Series type posts, type people. This team is not a very good team, but you can see some improvement in some of the guys. It's like I said, some of the, it's been the veterans who've been letting us down. I like to see, hopefully, by about midseason, a little bit more of some of the young pitchers. Aaron Blair looks like he's really ready to step up and take a spot in the rotation.
As good as Fulte was in the spring, I haven't really heard. Has he pitched?
Yeah, I believe he has. He's
let's see. I'm gonna look.
But Blair's been lighting it up down in down at Triple A. Fulte Newitz.
Yeah, he's looks like he's had two starts. He's thrown 10 innings. He's walked too many, but it's a small sample. He hasn't given up hardly any runs, but he probably should have.
Yeah.
All right. So did a fine job sending him down. That's fine. Let him continue to pitch. He's still got less than 200 innings in his career at the AAA level, so it's not like he's wasting time
right
down there.
No, yeah.
He's at 169 right now. So
Aaron Blair is 2-0 in two starts, 12 innings pitched, 9 K per 9, 3 walks per 9, 2.25 ERA with a 3.31 FIP.
Hopefully we should have some articles coming up soon on minor league performances in April and a glimpse at some of our top prospects and see how they're doing so far on the website.
I've been a little bit lax in getting some stuff up because of tax season ends today. If I was doing your taxes that are due today, yeah, you get extended. So have fun with that. But we'll start getting some articles up.
Yeah, that sounds good. Anything else to discuss?
I don't think so.
It's still early. There's not too much to tell. But all right, so thanks for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, like us on Facebook, read Outfield Fly Rule, tweet at us, do pretty much anything you can come up with.
We're smoke signals. They work,
yeah,
too.
We're everywhere. So thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Have a good day.